disease to you. I knew it was 50-50. I thought you might be one of the lucky ones. Well, I wasn't, she said, matter-of-factly. And over the years I built you up in my head to be this sort of monster. I thought you knew what you were doing when you did this to me. I thought it was revenge on me for kissing that boy, so I hated you. And hating you made everything easier, having someone to blame. You should blame me, he said. It is my fault. She ran her finger along the countertop, avoiding his eyes. I do blame you, but not the way I did before. Jordan reached up and grabbed his own hair with his fists, tugging on it hard. There isn't a day goes by I don't think about what I did to you. I bit you. I turned you. I made you what you are. I raised my hand to you. I hurt you. The one person I loved more than anything else in the world. Maya's eyes were shining with tears. Don't say that. That doesn't help. You think that helps? Isabel cleared her throat loudly, stepping into the living room. So, have you found anything? Maya looked away, blinking rapidly. Jordan, lowering his hands, said, Not really. We were just about to go through his wallet. He picked it up from where Maya had dropped it. Here. He tossed it to Isabel. She caught it and flicked it open. School pass, New York State non-driver's ID, a guitar pick tucked into the space that was supposed to hold credit cards, a $10 bill, and a receipt for dice. Something else caught her eye. A business card, shoved carelessly behind a photo of Simon and Clary, the kind of picture you might take in a cheap drugstore photo booth. They were both smiling. Isabel took out the card and stared at it. It had a swirling, almost abstract design of a floating guitar against clouds. Below that was a name. Satrina Kendall, band promoter. Below that was a telephone number and an Upper East Side address. Isabel frowned. Something, a memory, tugged at the back of her mind. Isabel held the card up toward Jordan and Maya, who were busy not looking at each other. What do you think of this? Before they could respond, the apartment door opened, and Alex strode in. He was scowling. Have you found anything? I've been standing down there for 30 minutes, and nothing even remotely threatening has come by. Unless you count the NYU student who threw up on the front steps. Here, Isabel said, handing the card over to her brother. Look at this. Does anything strike you as odd? You mean, besides the fact that no band promoter could possibly be interested in Lewis's sucky band? Alec inquired, taking the card between two long fingers. Lines appeared between his eyes. Satrina? Does that name mean something to you? Maya asked. Her eyes were still red, but her voice was steady. Satrina is one of the 17 names of Lilith, the mother of all demons. She is why warlocks are called Lilith's children, said Alec. Because she mothered demons, and they in turn brought forth the race of warlocks. And you have all 17 names committed to memory? Jordan sounded dubious. Alec gave him a cold look. Who are you again? Oh, shut up, Alec, Isabel said, in the tone she only ever took with her brother. Look, not all of us have your memory for boring facts. I don't suppose you recall the other names of Lilith. With a superior look, Alec rattled them off. Satrina, Lilith, Ita, Kali, Batna, Talto. Talto, Isabel yelped. That's it! I knew I was remembering something. I knew there was a connection. Quickly, she told them about the Church of Talto, what Clary had found there, and how it connected to the dead half-demon baby at Beth Israel. I wish you'd told me about this before, Alex said. Yes, Talto is another name for Lilith, and Lilith has always been associated with babies. She was Adam's first wife, but she fled from the Garden of Eden because she didn't want to obey Adam or God. God cursed her for her disobedience, though, any child she bore would die. The legend says she tried over and over to have a child, but they were all born dead. Eventually, she swore she would have her vengeance against God by weakening and murdering infant humans. You might say she is the demon goddess of dead children. But you said she was the mother of demons, said Maya. She was able to create demons by scattering drops of her blood on the earth in a place called Edom, said Alec. Because they were born out of her hatred for God and mankind, they became demons. Aware that they were all staring at him, he shrugged. It's just a story. All stories are true, said Isabel. This had been a tenet of her belief since she was a child. All shadow hunters believed it. There was no one religion, no one truth, and no myth lacked meaning. You know that, Alec. I know something else, too, Alec said, handing her back the card. That telephone number and that address are crap. No way they're real. Maybe, Isabel said, tucking the card into her pocket. But we don't have anywhere else to start looking, so we're going to start there.
Simon could only stare. The body floating inside the coffin, Sebastian's, didn't appear to be alive. At least he wasn't breathing. But he clearly wasn't exactly dead either. It had been 2 months. If he were dead, Simon was fairly sure, he'd look like he was in a lot worse shape than he did. His body was very white, like marble. One hand was a bandaged stump, but he was otherwise unmarked. He appeared to be asleep, his eyes shut, his arms loose at his sides. Only the fact that his chest wasn't rising or falling indicated that something was very wrong. But, Simon said, knowing he sounded ridiculous, he's dead. Jace killed him. Lilith placed a pale hand on the glass surface of the coffin. Jonathan, she said, and Simon remembered that that was in fact his name. Her voice had an odd soft quality when she said it, as if she were crooning to a child. He's beautiful, isn't he? Said Simon, looking with loathing at the creature inside the coffin. The boy who had murdered 9-year-old Max Lightwood. The creature who had killed Hodge. Had tried to kill them all. Not my type, really. Jonathan is unique, she said. He is the only shadow hunter I have ever known who is part greater demon. This makes him very powerful. He's dead, Simon said. He felt that somehow it was important to keep making this point, though Lilith didn't seem to quite grasp it. Lilith, gazing down at Sebastian, frowned. It's true. Jay's light was slipped out behind him and stabbed him in the back, through to the heart. How do you? I was in interest, said Lilith. When Valentine opened the doorway to the demon worlds, I came through. Not to fight in his stupid battle, out of curiosity more than anything else. That Valentine should have such hubris. She broke off, shrugging. Heaven smote him down for it, of course. I saw the sacrifice he made. I saw the angel rise and turn on him. I saw what was brought back. I am the oldest of demons. I know the old laws. A life for a life. I raced to Jonathan. It was almost too late. That which was human about him died instantly. His heart had ceased to beat, his lungs to inflate. The old laws were not enough. I tried to bring him back then. He was too far gone. All I could do was this, preserve him for this moment. Simon wondered briefly what would happen if he made a run for it. Dashed past this insane demon and threw himself off the roof of the building. He couldn't be harmed by another living creature. That was the result of the mark. But he doubted its power extended to protecting him against the ground. Still, he was a vampire. If he fell 40 stories and smashed every bone in his body, would he heal from that? He swallowed hard and found Lilith looking at him with amusement. Don't you want to know? She said in her cold, seductive voice. What moment I mean? Before he could answer, she leaned forward, her elbows on the coffin. I suppose you know the story of the way the Nephilim came to be. How the angel Raziel mixed his blood with the blood of men and gave it to a man to drink, and that man became the first of the Nephilim. I've heard it. In effect, the angel created a new race of creature. And now, with Jonathan, a new race has been born again. as Jonathan Shadowhunter led the first Nephilim, so shall this Jonathan lead the new race that I intend to create. This new race you intend, Simon held up his hands. You know what? You want to lead a new race starting off with one dead guy? You go right ahead. I don't see what this has to do with me. He is dead now. He need not remain so. Lilith's voice was cool, unemotional. There is, of course, one kind of downworlder whose blood offers the possibility of, shall we say, resurrection. Vampires? Said Simon. You want me to turn Sebastian into a vampire? His name is Jonathan. Her tone was sharp. And yes, in a sense. I want you to bite him, to drink his blood, and to give him your blood in exchange. I won't do it. Are you sure of that? A world without Sebastian? Simon used the name deliberately. In it is a better world than the one with him in it. I won't do it. Anger was rising in Simon, a swift tide. Anyway, I couldn't if I wanted to. He's dead. Vampires can't bring back the dead. You ought to know that, if you know so much. Once the soul is gone from the body, nothing can bring someone back, thankfully. Lilith bent her gaze on him. You really don't know, do you? She said. Clary never told you. Simon was getting fed up. Never told me what? She chuckled. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a life for a life. To prevent chaos, there must be order. If a life is given to the light, a life is owed to the dark as well. I have, Simon said slowly and deliberately, literally no idea what you're talking about, and I don't care. You villains and your creepy eugenics programs are starting to bore me. So I'm going to leave now. You're welcome to try and stop me by threatening or hurting me. I encourage you to go ahead and try. She looked at him and chuckled. Cain rose up, she said. You are a bit like him whose mark you bear. He was stubborn, as you are. Foolhardy, too. He went up against... Simon choked on the word. God. I'm just dealing with you. He turned to leave. I would not turn your back on me, Daylighter, said Lilith. And there was something in her voice that made him look back at her, where she leaned on Sebastian's coffin. You think you cannot be hurt, she said with a sneer. And indeed, I cannot lift a hand against you. I am no fool. I have seen the holy fire of the divine. I have no wish to see it turned against me. I am not Valentine. To bargain with one I cannot understand, I am a demon, but a very old one. I know humanity better than you might think. I understand the weakness of pride, of lust for power, of desire of the flesh, of greed, of vanity, and love. Love isn't a weakness? Oh, it isn't? She said. I glanced past him, with a look as cold and pointed as an icicle. He turned, not wanting to, knowing he must, and looked behind him. There, on the brick walkway, was Jace. He wore a dark suit and a white shirt. Standing in front of him was Clary, still in the pretty gold-colored dress she had worn to the ironworks party. Her long wavy red hair had come out of its knot and hung down around her shoulders. She stood very still in the circle of Jace's arms. It would almost have looked like a romantic picture if it were not for the fact that in one of his hands, Jace was holding a long and glittering bone-handled knife, and the edge of it was pressed against Clary's throat. Simon stared at Jace in total and absolute shock. There was no emotion on Jace's face. No light in his eyes. He seemed utterly blank. Very slightly he inclined his head. "I brought her, Lady Lilith," he said. "Just as you asked."
Chapter 17. And Cain Rose Up. Clary had never been so cold. Even when she had crawled out of Lake Lynn, coughing and sputtering its poisonous water onto the shore, she hadn't been this cold. Even when she had thought Jace was dead, she hadn't felt this terrible icy paralysis in her heart. Then she had burned with rage, rage against her father. Now, she just felt ice, all the way down to her toes. She had come back to consciousness in the marble lobby of a strange building, under the shadow of an unlit chandelier. Jace had been carrying her, one arm under her bent knees, the other supporting her head. Still dizzy and groggy, she'd buried her head against his neck for a moment, trying to remember where she was. "What happened?" she had whispered. They had reached the elevator. Jace pushed the button, and Clary heard the rattle that meant the machine was moving down toward them. But where were they? "You were unconscious," he said. "But how?" She remembered then, and fell silent. His hands on her, the sting of her steely on her skin, the wave of darkness that had come over her, something wrong with the rune he had drawn on her, the way it had looked and felt. She stayed motionless in his arms for a moment, and then said, "Put me down." He set her down on her feet, and they looked at each other. Only a small space separated them. She could have reached out and touched him, but for the first time since she had met him, she didn't want to. She had the terrible feeling that she was looking at a stranger. He looked like Jace, and sounded like Jace when he spoke, and had felt like Jace when she was holding him. But his eyes were strange and distant, as was the tiny smile playing about his mouth. The elevator doors opened behind him. She remembered standing in the nave of the Institute saying, "I love you," to a closed elevator door. The gap yawned behind him now, as black as the mouth of a cave. She felt for the steely in her pocket. It was gone. "You knocked me out," she said, "with a rune. You brought me here." "Why?" His beautiful face was entirely, carefully blank. "I had to do it. I didn't have a choice." She turned and ran then, going for the door, but he was faster than she was. He always had been. He swung in front of her, blocking her path, and held out his hands. "Clary, don't run," he said. "Please. For me." She looked at him incredulously. His voice was the same. He sounded just like Jace, but not like him, like a recording of him, she thought. All the tones and patterns of his voice there, but the life that animated it, gone. How had she not realized it before? She had thought he sounded remote because of stress and pain, but no. It was that he was gone. Her stomach turned over, and she bolted for the door again, only to have him catch her around the waist and swing her back toward him. She pushed at him, her fingers locking into the fabric of his shirt, ripping it sideways. She froze, staring. On the skin of his chest, just over his heart, was a rune. It wasn't one she had ever seen before. It wasn't black, like Shadowhunter runes were, but dark red, the color of blood. And it lacked the delicate grace of the runes from the Grey Book. It was scrawling, ugly. Its lines sharp and cruel, rather than curving and generous. Jace didn't seem to see it. He stared down at himself, as if wondering what she was gazing at, then looked at her, puzzled. "It's all right. You didn't hurt me." "That rune," she began, but cut herself off, hard. Maybe he didn't know it was there. "Let me go, Jace," she said instead, backing away from him. "You don't have to do this." "You're wrong about that," he said, and reached for her again. This time she didn't fight. What would happen even if she escaped? She couldn't just leave him here. Jace was still there, she thought, trapped somewhere behind those blank eyes, maybe screaming for her. She had to stay with him, had to know what was happening. She let him pick her up and carry her into the elevator. "The Silent Brothers will notice you left," she said, as the buttons for floor after floor lit up while the elevator rose. "They'll alert the Quave. They'll come looking." "I need not fear the Brothers. I wasn't a prisoner. They weren't expecting me to want to leave. They won't notice I'm gone until they wake up tomorrow morning." "What if they wake up earlier than that?" "Oh," he said, with a cold certainty. "They won't. It's much more likely the other partygoers at the ironworks will notice you're missing. But what can they do about it? They'll have no idea where you went, and tracking to this building is blocked. He stroked her hair back from her face, and she went still. You're just going to have to trust me. No one's coming for you. He didn't bring the knife out until they left the elevator, and then he said, I would never hurt you. You know that, don't you? Even as he flicked her hair back with the tip of the blade and pressed the edge to her throat. The icy air hit her bare shoulders and arms as soon as they were out on the roof. Jace's hands were warm where he touched her, and she could feel the heat of him through her thin dress. But it didn't warm her, not inside. Inside, she was filled with jagged slivers of ice. She grew colder still when she saw Simon, looking at her with his huge dark eyes. His face looked scrubbed blank with shock, like a white piece of paper. He was looking at her, and Jace behind her, as if he were seeing something fundamentally wrong. A person with their face turned inside out, a map of the world with all the land gone and nothing left but ocean. She barely looked at the woman beside him, with her dark hair and her thin, cruel face. Cleary's gaze had gone immediately to the transparent coffin on its pedestal of stone. It seemed to glow from within, as if lit by a milky inner light. The water that Jonathan was floating in was probably not water, but some other, less natural liquid. Normal Clary, she thought dispassionately, would have screamed at the sight of her brother, floating still and dead-looking and totally unmoving in what looked like Snow White's glass coffin. But frozen Clary just stared with a remote and distant shock. Lips as red as blood, skin as white as snow, hair as black as ebony. Well, some of that was true. When she had met Sebastian, his hair had been black, but it was white silver now, floating around his head like albino seaweed, the same color as his father's hair, their father's hair. His skin was so pale it looked as if it could be made up of luminous crystals. But his lips were colorless too, as were the lids of his eyes. Thank you, Jace, the woman that Jace had called Lady Lilith said. Nicely done, and very prompt. I thought I was going to have difficulties with you at first, but it appears I worried for nothing. Clary stared. Though the woman did not look familiar, her voice was familiar. She had heard that voice before, but where? She tried to pull away from Jace, but his grip on her only tightened. The edge of the knife kissed her throat. An accident, she told herself. Jace, even this Jace, would never hurt her. You, she said to Lilith between her teeth. What have you done to Jace?
Valentine's daughter speaks.
The dark-haired woman smiled. Simon,
would you like to explain?
Simon looked like he was going to throw up. I have no idea. He sounded as if he were choking. Believe me, you two were the last thing I expected to see.
The Silent Brothers said that a demon was responsible for what's been happening with Jace, Clary said, and saw Simon look more baffled than ever. The woman, though, just watched her with eyes like flat obsidian circles. That demon was you, wasn't it? But why Jace? What do you want from us?
Us? Lilith pealed with laughter.
As if you mattered in this, my girl.
Why you?
Because you are a means to an end. Because I needed both these boys, and both of them love you. Because Jace Herondale is the one person you trust more than anyone else in the world. And you are someone the Daylighter loves enough to give up his own life for. Perhaps you cannot be harmed, she said, turning to Simon. But she can be.
Are you so stubborn that you will sit back and watch Jace cut her throat rather than give up your blood?
Simon, looking like death itself, shook his head slowly. But before he could speak, Clary said,
Simon, no! Don't do it! Whatever it is, Jace wouldn't hurt me!
The woman's fathomless eyes turned to Jace. She smiled.
Cut her, she said.
Just a little. Clary felt Jace's shoulders tense, the way they had in the park when he'd been showing her how to fight. She felt something at her throat, like a stinging kiss, cold and hot at once, and felt a warm trickle of liquid spill down onto her collarbone. Simon's eyes widened. He had cut her. He had actually done it. She thought of Jace crouched on the floor of the bedroom at the Institute, his pain clearly in every line of his body. I dreamed that you'd come into my room, and then I hurt you. I cut you, or strangle, or stab you, and you die, looking up at me with those green eyes of yours while your life bleeds away between my hands. She had not believed him, not really. He was Jace. He would never hurt her. She looked down and saw the blood staining the neckline of her dress. It looked like red paint. You see now, said the woman. He does what I tell him. Don't blame him for it. He is completely within my power. For weeks I've crept through his head, seeing his dreams, learning his fears and wants, his guilts and desires. In a dream, he accepted my mark, and that mark has been burning through him ever since. Through his skin, down into his soul. Now his soul is in my hands, to shape or direct as I see fit. He will do whatever I say. Clary remembered what the Silent Brothers had said. When a shadow hunter is born, a ritual is performed, a number of protective spells placed upon the child by both the Silent Brothers and the Iron Sisters. When Jace died and then was raised, he was born a second time, with those protections and rituals stripped away. It would have left him as open as an unlocked door, open to any kind of demonic influence or malevolence. I did this, Clary thought. I brought him back, and I wanted it kept secret. If we had only told someone what had happened, maybe the ritual could have been done in time to keep Lilith out of his head. She felt sick with self-loathing. Behind her, Jace was silent, as still as a statue, his arms around her and the knife still at her throat. She could feel it against her skin when she took a breath to speak, keeping her voice even with an effort. I understand that you control Jace, she said. I don't understand why. Surely there are other, easier ways to threaten me. Lilith sighed as if the whole business had grown tedious. I need you, she said, with exaggerated patience, to get Simon to do what I want, which is give me his blood. And I need Jace not just because I needed a way to get you here, but as a counterweight. All things in magic must balance, Clarissa. She pointed at the rough black circle drawn on the tiles, and then at Jace. He was the first to be brought back, the first soul restored to this world in the name of light. Therefore, he must be present for me to successfully restore the second, in the name of the dark. Do you understand now, silly girl? We are all needed here, Simon to die, Jace to live, Jonathan to return, and you, Valentine's daughter, to be the catalyst for it all. The demon woman's voice had dropped to a low chant. With a shock of surprise, Clary realized that she now knew where she had heard it before. She saw her father, standing inside a pentagram, a black-haired woman with tentacles for eyes kneeling at his feet. The woman said, The child born with this blood in him will exceed in power the greater demons of the abysses between the worlds, but it will burn out his humanity, as poison burns the life from the blood. I know, Clary said through stiff lips. I know who you are. I saw you cut your wrist and drip blood into a cup for my father. The angel Ethereal showed it to me in a vision. Simon's eyes darted back and forth between Clary and the woman, whose dark eyes held a hint of surprise. Clary guessed she didn't surprise easily. I saw my father summon you. I know what he called you, my Lady of Edom. You're a greater demon. You gave your blood to make my brother